live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. No video streaming today. Got a little technical glitch there. That'll resume tomorrow. Today, no guests. Just an in-depth understanding of health and nutrition. And an opportunity for you to call and share your thoughts, questions, or insights on any of the topics we discussed. A special discussion based upon the work of Suzanne Humphreys, MD, from the International Medical Council on Vaccination, Herd Immunity, the Flawed Science and Failures of Mass Vaccination. Because once again, people are being asked to get vaccinated, and they're saying that you need to protect yourself for the person who is not. Hence, if 95% of the public gets vaccinated, then you'll be protected. What proof do they have? Dr. Humphreys will dissect this in a commentary that I'll be reading. Let's begin. Right now, peaches, plums, nectarines, they're all great in season. But there's good news from Science Daily, based upon a study presented to the American Chemical Society just this week. They found that these act as anti-obesity and anti-diabetes foods. Let me quote from their study. Quote, peaches, plums, and nectarines have bioactive compounds that can potentially fight off obesity-related diabetes and cardiovascular disease. The study, which is presented, talks about the metabolic syndrome in which obesity and inflammation lead to serious health conditions. Quote, in recent years, obesity has become a major concern in society due to the health problems associated with it. In the United States, statistics show that around 30% of the population is overweight or obese, and these cases are increasing every year in alarming numbers. End quote. Then it went on to talk about their study. So my suggestion is that look carefully at having those fruits, plums, peaches, and nectarines in your diet. But most people won't. First, they're seasonal. And it's hard to get them organic because there's about 6 months a year when they're not anywhere grown in the United States. So you can get them frozen in the frozen section of your health food store. Always get them organic. Or you can get them in concentrates, not peaches or plums or nectarines, but some of the other berries. Like pomegranate, you can get blueberry, wild blueberry, papaya, tart cherry. Those are concentrates, and those are good. Or best of all, get your compounding powders, your red powders that contain these, and therefore you're getting a healthy dose every single day. But now the science is there to support them. Quote, our work shows that the four major phenolic groups, the anthocyanins, the chorogenic acids, the quercetin derivatives, and catechins, work on different cells, macrophages, which is part of your immune system, vascular endothelial cells. They modulate different expressions of genes, meaning in a good way, and the proteins, depending upon the type of compound. So what they're saying here, quite simply, is that when you're eating your peaches, plums, nectarines, and that goes for other fruit as well, you're helping the DNA, you're protecting the DNA. Quite simply, you're going to live a longer life. Next up, good research from Missouri University of Science and Technology. They found that wild almond tree oil can combat obesity and diabetes. Quote from Science Daily. And here's what they say. They say, published in a major peer-reviewed journal, they say, a future weapon in the battle against obesity and diabetes could come from an oil derived from the seeds of wild almond trees. The key to the oil's potential lies in its ability to affect certain microorganisms living in our bodies. In this study, presented before the American Society of Microbiology in San Francisco, the researchers reported that adding what is called stearculic oil, stear, S-T-E-R, culic, C-U-L-I-C, to the diets of obese laboratory mice increased their sensitivity to insulin. This was due to the oil's effect on three types of microorganisms that live in the gut of the mice. As a result, quote, they saw a statistically significant improvement in glucose tolerance, that's good, insulin sensitivity, that's great, in the obese mice. So, here's the deal. You could get this by having about an hour's worth of exercise. And also, if you began to take some raw organic coconut oil each day with some flaxseed oil each day, have about 40 to 50 grams of high-quality fiber from fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds each day. So this way there's no reason to be overweight and certainly no reason to have diabetes, but that's good science. I want to get you something that's coming ahead of in the future. Another thing on diabetes, it's all about the lifestyle. Now, this is a major study in the American Journal of Public Health, and it says the following. Making lifestyle changes can prevent type 2 diabetes simply, effectively, and cheaply. Now, as this audience knows, diabetes is a chronic and complex disease marked by high levels of sugar in the blood that arise due to problems with the hormone insulin, which, as we know, regulates our blood sugar levels. It's usually caused by an inability to produce insulin and or an inability to respond correctly to insulin. If you don't produce insulin, then it's type 1 diabetes, which I believe is a lot of that's due to injury from vaccines. Because if you look pre-1990, when people were only getting one or two vaccines, there was very, very rare for a child to get type 1 diabetes. Today, it's very common. The only difference in the last 30 years is the number of vaccines kids are getting. In this case, they involved a group of 230 poor urban neighborhood children in the San Francisco area, and they followed them for 6 months, counseling them, and they found that those who got the counseling on eating more fruits and vegetables, less fat, and exercising had a substantial drop in their blood triglycerides, which is a key measure of diabetes type 2. Quote, diabetes is not something you are necessarily going to get just because it runs in your family. You bet. And I have a major new documentary on this coming out. Those of you who've been taking drugs because you have acid reflux, you've seen the ad, right? Where the person goes to eat a pizza or some big sausage and suddenly says, oh, heartburn. Then he takes the drug, the little purple pill, and then he can eat it. Well, first, that's bad because it's stopping digestion. So if there was anything of value that your body actually needed from the meal, it's not going to get it. And secondly, it sets a pattern in motion where people say, okay, I can eat or drink anything. If I get an upset stomach, I'll just take the pill. So then that is really bad because then without realizing it, you absorb the calories, but you won't absorb the nutrients. You can be overfed and undernourished. According to Sayer G., who's the founder of Green Med Info, good site, by the way, water extinguishes stomach acid 175 times faster than some drugs. Let me quote from his newsletter. Could the water people swallow their acid reflux pills with be more therapeutic than the drugs themselves? A remarkable study took place comparing a glass of water to an antacid and an acid-blocking drug and their overall effect in increasing gastric pH, making it more alkaline in healthy subjects. Published in the journal Digestive Disease and Sciences, researchers took 12 healthy subjects who were screened to be negative for Helicobacter pylori infection. That, by the way, is what causes stomach ulcers. And gave them a single oral dose of the following agents: a glass of water, an antacid, Zantac, and Nexium, and acid hex. These are all different antacids. Gastric pH was recorded for 6 hours after the drug. The study found it took the following duration to increase the pH of the stomach. Water increased it in 1 minute. The antacid in 2 minutes, another antacid in 50 minutes, another antacid in 171 minutes, and another antacid in 151 minutes, and the last antacid in 175 minutes. But water, 1 minute. So that is phenomenal. And the water kept the pH up and longer than did any of the antacids. So then here's the idea. Why not have water when you have an upset stomach? I think that just makes common sense. I'd do something a little different. I'd have water, but also maybe you would want to put in something like aloe vera, which would be very good as well. And keep in mind, if you have a high level or low level of acid, which is maybe 2, where you have a lot of acid in the stomach, you end up with more diarrhea, more susceptible to all forms of malabsorption. And then the drugs they give you, those drugs increase pneumonia, vitamin C deficiency, gastric cancer, bone fractures, magnesium deficiency, and B12 deficiency. The drugs do. The water, none of that. So let's have some water and get rid of the drugs. Now, this comes from Jonathan Benson of naturalnews.com, and he says this. The government report, many vaccines are expired or improperly stored, putting children at serious risk. And I'll quote this. A recent report issued by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Office of the Inspector General, contains some shocking new information about vaccines. It turns out that millions of vaccines administered to children every single year are being improperly stored at temperatures that either are too high or too low, or are simply past their expiration dates, which could render them ineffective or even dangerous. The 52-page report entitled Vaccines for Children's Program, Vulnerabilities in Vaccine Management, which you can view, is an assessment of 45 vaccine providers that operate under the Health and Human Services Vaccine for Children program. They distributed 82 million doses of taxpayer-funded vaccines to roughly 40 million children in 1 year at a cost of nearly $4 billion. So here we find out that, not from the mainstream media, that the vaccines given to your children could be expired, worthless, or dangerous, or some combination of all that. And no one's held accountable. Also, as many of you know, I'm trying to get people interested in the subject of genetic engineering of our food, at least to the point where they would insist upon knowing if the food they're eating is genetically engineered, hence the labeling laws that we're trying to get enacted in each state, starting in California. This is the latest, and it's from Earth Open Source, and it says the following. Aren't critics of genetically engineered food anti-science? Isn't the debate over GMOs a spat between emotional but ignorant activists on one hand and rational GMO-supporting scientists on the other? No. A new report released today, GMO Myths and Truths, challenges these claims. The report presents a large body of peer-reviewed scientific and other authoritative evidence of the hazards to health and the environmental hazards posed by genetically engineered crops and organisms. Unusually, the initiative for the report came not from campaigners, but from two genetic engineers who believe there is good scientific reason to be very concerned about GMO foods and crops. One of the authors of the report, Dr. Michael Antonius of King's College London School of Medicine, uses genetic engineering for medical applications but warns against its use in developing crops for human food and animal feed. He says, quote, genetically modified crops are promoted on the basis of ambiguous claims that they are safe to eat, environmentally beneficial, increase yields, reduce reliance on pesticides, can help solve world hunger. I felt what was needed was a coalition of the evidence that addresses the technology from the scientific point of view. Research studies show that genetically modified crops have harmful effects on laboratory animals in feeding trials and on the environment during cultivation. They've increased the use of pesticides and have failed, I repeat, failed to increase yields. Our report concludes that there are safer, more effective alternatives to Meeting the World's Food Needs. The other author is Dr. John Fagan, a former genetic engineer, who also was famous for returning $614,000 grant to the National Institutes of Health due to concerns about the safety and ethics of the technology. And so he says, crop genetic engineering as practiced today is a crude, imprecise, and outmoded technology. It can create unexpected toxins or allergens in foods and affect their nutritional value. Recent advances point to better ways of using our knowledge of genomics to improve food crops that do not involve GMOs. So one more reason not to believe anything about GMOs coming out of our White House, National Institutes of Health, the FDA, and USDA, all of which have been substantially compromised in their integrity because of the makers of GMO giving them money. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and then from our real in-depth file, herd immunity. If you are, like myself, challenging the science and efficacy of vaccines, you'll always have one of these people stand up and say, well, what about herd immunity? Well, let's talk back using science and scholarship and challenge them. And then I'll take your calls at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And if you are not near a computer, if you're not near a land-based station, now, good news, you can be anywhere in America and just pick up your cell phone or your phone and call a number and listen to this show. 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066. We're approaching 60,000 people who've listened over the here and over a million minutes. So, a lot of people listening over the telephone. And this just is a new service. It costs what your regular phone company provider charges. But that's a great service for you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. In this segment of our program, I'd like to share some thoughts from Green Med Info and Sarah G. It's called, Has Drug-Driven Medicine Become a Form of Human Sacrifice? I thought it was interesting, and we'll post it on our website. But here's what he has to say, and I won't go through all of it, just his important point. Benjamin Rush accurately foretold a grave possibility facing Americans today, namely that the art and science of healing be restricted to a select class of allopathic physicians who have the sole legal right to recommend and administer medicines and whose pharmacopeia excludes, as a matter of principle, all the healing foods, vitamins, and herbs which have been used safely and effectively for countless millennia in the prevention and treatment of disease. Well, Benjamin Rush was also the doctor who bled George Washington, our first president, to death, taking his blood when he had a simple you know, cold. He was also the first psychiatrist engaged in torturous processes to try to rid the demons out of people. And also, he was the one who coined the phrase nigritude, which meant that you were black because you suffer from a rare form of leprosy. And therefore, anything that could lighten your skin would cure the leprosy. Yet this is a man who wanted to exclude all healing foods and vitamins and herbs. We have entered an era where medicine no longer bears any resemblance to the art and science of healing. The doctor no longer facilitates the body's innate healing capacities with time, care, good nutrition, and special help from our plant allies. To the contrary, medicine has transmogrified into a business enterprise founded on the inherently nihilistic principles of pure, unbridled capitalism, with an estimated 786,000 Americans dying annually from iatrogenic or medically caused deaths. Many modern diseases are, in fact, created by fiat. Age-old symptoms of nutritional deficiencies or chemical poisonings are packaged, repackaged, and renamed in Latin and Greek as would-be monolithic disease entities, and subsequently rolled out to the consumer as new markets, each disease representing a veritable goldmine of treatable symptoms, each symptom providing justification for the prescription of a new set of patented toxic drug commodities. The medicines themselves are often devoid of intrinsic value, being nothing more than rebranded and repurchased chemicals intended to be administered in sublethal concentrations. Indeed, many of these chemicals are too toxic to be legally released into the environment and should never be administered intentionally to a human who is already sick. You need look no further than a typical drug package insert to find proof that the side effects of most drugs far outnumber their purported beneficial effects. These chemicals, in fact, are so highly leveraged against their true value that they can sell for as much as 500,000% above cost. Only medical, pharmaceutical, and financial institutions like the Federal Reserve are legally empowered to generate the illusion that they are creating something of value out of nothing of value on this scale. This manipulation of perceived value, which is the basis for the global dominance of the drug-based medical model, is not unlike how financial institutions created toxic derivative products like credit default swaps and derivatives, essentially creating the illusion of financial well-being and prosperity at the very moment they were planting the seeds of death within the global economy, ruining the lives of countless millions in the process. Within our present dominant medical system, healing has not simply been forgotten, but intentionally exercised, as it represents the antithesis of perpetual profitability, which requires the incurability of the human body. Where the truth be told and the body's self-regenerating capacities acknowledged, the entire superstructure of drug-based medicine and hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue it generates annually would crumble overnight. When a handful of turmeric has more chemotherapeutic activity than any drug yet to receive FDA approval, or an enzyme from pineapple core is superior to a 40-year-old blockbuster chemotoxic agent, one begins to understand why the hundreds of studies proving natural substances can destroy cancer are never offered, never discussed. You can't compete with free, effective, and safe in a medical marketplace dominated by expensive, ineffective, and unsafe drugs. If this degeneration into quackery and snake oil salesmanship, which is modern drug-driven medicine, were simply a lesson of what bad things can happen when a healthcare system is no longer a basis of human right, but strictly a profit-driven commodity, perhaps Americans can find it within themselves to once again free themselves from the shackles of oppression. After all, do we not consider ourselves the very originators of freedom, independence, and democracy? Have we not such great faith in these principles that we practically trip all over ourselves in our effort to export these values overseas, whether we are invited to or not? Sadly, the undercover dictatorship Benjamin Rush foretold is not simply a homegrown one we can root out from the inside, as it were. Although the American Medical Association, the Food and Drug Administration, behave as if they are the top of this pyramid of power relations, they serve far lower on the hierarchy. And while the government of the United States and American corporate lobbying groups may appear to be behind the FDA's shameless pandering to the interests of drug companies, transnational corporations and organizations and a handful of elite governing them are in fact pulling the strings. In conclusion, the United States no longer enjoys global economic and cultural power. We are now embedded in an international playing field where multinational and transnational organizations like the drug company Pfizer, or the World Health Organization, or the World Trade Organization, have power and influence that overshadows the U.S. or any other particular government or nation state. These large organizations blur the divisions traditionally drawn between public and private institutions, insofar as their agendas and mandates are consistent with global economic imperatives, which do not account for the self-proclaimed sovereignty of any particular nation, state, constitution, or laws above them. So that's what he has to say. In effect, what he's saying is something I believe many of you are already aware of, that medicine today has been divorced from healing, that we place no emphasis upon the real cause of diseases. For example, it's not difficult to see what contributes to Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, ALS, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer, prostate cancer, arthritis, fibromyalgia, diabetes, heart disease. They all have some very common denominators, inflammation. So if we were to be honest, at the national level, at the level of policymaking, the FDA, the U.S. Surgeon General, the President of the United States, and simply went out on television and says, look, if we want to prevent all these diseases and the suffering that you're going to have if you don't make changes, and the enormous financial burden of paying for all these diseases, either you personally or insurance or the government, here's what you can do to prevent them. Get rid of, and then just list all these, arachidonic acid. Well, how do we get that? How about all these meat products? So eliminate the meat. All these refined carbohydrates leading to insulin resistance and diabetes and obesity. Well, how do we, what are they? Well, bagels and cream cheese and cheeseburgers and muffins, toast, pizza crusts. All right, get rid of those out of your life. And all the dairy. Well, once you finish telling people all the different causes of inflammation and known cancer-causing or disease-promoting things they're ingesting, that's 95% of what makes profit for advertisers in the food business on television. You don't see blueberries. You don't see pineapples advertised. What you see is something that can be made profitable and can be patented. Well, apples can't be patented. You can genetically alter them and get rid of all the natural ones, but we still have some organic varieties. So no one's going to go on television telling you to eat apples or apple skins or blueberries or make a smoothie in the morning by putting a tablespoon of that raw organic coconut oil in and flaxseed oil or chia seeds and a teaspoon of hemp powder or pea powder or brown rice powder. They're not going to tell you this because there's no one profiting from it. But to tell you in your kid to eat a genetically engineered corn and then to cook it and bake it at such a high temperature that you change its chemistry, making it a very toxic substance that we call acrylamides, and then to load it with sugar and chemicals and artificial flavoring agents, which can trigger allergy reactions in the body, or some of those are brain chemical reactions causing hyperactivity and learning disabilities, and then mislabeling that. That's easy to promote. You promote a sugar-coated cereal, or you promote a three-patty hamburger for $2. Hey, people, then that's the deal. Where else can I get a whole meal with that much protein for $2? And then I get a big drink, a 30-liter drink, and you start thinking, but hold on a second. That's giving you 500 milligrams of caffeine. It's giving you over 20 teaspoons of sugar. Do you really want that in your body? And someone says, well, it's cheap and I'm used to it. And if it were bad, the government wouldn't be encouraging me to eat it. But the doctors don't say anything. The U.S. Surgeon General doesn't say anything. The president doesn't say anything. No one says anything, so it can't be bad. Or someone will be telling us not to do it. And so there we are. So from Benjamin Rush saying that we should allow no competition in medicine and then providing nothing but quackery. And then today, the only thing it's allowed is what is officially sanctioned. The trouble is, with the exception of emergency medical care, which is good, everything else fails and kills people and injures people. And the American diet that is promoted and advocated and that people are using are causing all of our diseases. But don't think for a second that people in power are not aware of this. The doctor's not aware of it. Nurse's not aware of it. Dietitian's not aware of it. They're all aware of this. But who amongst them has the courage to stand up and say, enough? Stop all this. We should be drinking green tea and eating blueberries and more. Nope. That's not going to happen. So then when those of us who know this information and have the background and qualifications to state it with some authority, we then are excluded, no matter what our previous standing. I come from one of those unique backgrounds where I had mainstream best-selling books, most best-selling books in health in American history. It was on WMCA, WOR, and ABC, WBD, all told for 30 years. So on the one hand, my credibility comes because of my official position inside the officially recognized media, including 20 separate specials on public television stations around the country. On the other hand, all the good work that I've done on non-commercial radio and for 34, almost 35 years every day on Pacifica stations, BAI, KPFK in Los Angeles, PFW in Washington, those are all set aside. Same identical information. If I say something on a Sunday night ABC show, that's credible. If I say the same identical thing the next day on BAI, that's not credible. How's that possible? Same information. Different audience, because one is said within the sanctity of official media. The other is said outside of official media, and anything that's outside of official is excluded. So all the good healing, all the alternative healing that has been proven to work, that's outside of official medicine and outside of official media. Hence, when a Dr. Oz suggests one day that a particular type of a supplement will work, the next day it flies off the shelves. But I remember when I had Dr. Oz, I believe it was on his first television appearance nationally on my PBS special, Get Healthy Now, and he was just one of the 12 panelists. Today, he is a national spokesperson, but is he really into alternative health? Not at all. Is he into an alternative way of living? No. But one single statement, that's considered essential. That's how warped the world is today. The world is today. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go to some calls now. Al from Long Island. Hi, Al. Your turn.
Gary?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Thank you for the opportunity. I have one short question, then my main question. Is there a website that lists holistic physicians?
There is no website that I'm aware of that lists holistic physicians, but we're working on such a site right now. We've been working for 2 years, but it's a time-consuming process because a lot of the people who are listed, when you contact them, they're really not under what I would call holistic doctor. A lot of them want to get the business, but they don't have the background or the knowledge. And so I don't have that list complete, but we are working on it. Okay?
Thank you.
Let's say hello to Flory from Florida, Miami. Hi, Flory.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for the show. I just want to say that I was one of the privileged ones to be at the Florida retreat. And I want to say that it was a lifetime exchanging experience. The energy work you did on three of the participants was something that, unless I didn't witness it with my own eyes, I wouldn't be able to believe that it's possible. The animals were adorable. I connected with the gods. And again, it strikes me that some people consume these animals as a source of protein. I learned from the great food we had there that it's possible to be a vegan. There is endless choices of food we can eat, that I can eat, and I was able to let go the last two animal proteins I was still eating, which is fish and eggs. And the ranch is a paradise, so the name of Paradise Gardens was indeed a good choice. And I want to thank you for making that possible and for sharing with us all your knowledge and insight. And I want to say, as I have said in the past, I wish you will run for president. That for sure will make the difference I would love to see in this country. I know that will not happen, but again, thank you for everything.
Okay, thank you. Luann. Luann's on. Luann, your turn.
Hi, Gary. I have I've had several emails here from people. It's amazing how the audience these days are asking some really, really heartfelt questions rather than just, you know, focusing on a disease. I have something here from Kevin, and he says, 3 years ago you did a program that really rang true, and it still rings true today. He says, if a citizen commits a crime, we're labeled with it forever. If a major corporation commits a crime, such as the Vioxx debacle and the whole vaccine industry, where they cannot be held liable for the deaths and the severe side effects that are caused by their drugs, he says, what does it say about our society? That's his question for you.
On my website, I have a video interview of about, I think, 18 to 20 minutes with the Dr. Sartoris. She is quite simply one of the most brilliant scientists I've ever interviewed. I remember sitting down with her. I'd never met her before in California. And with the Pacific, we were overlooking the Pacific at this beautiful little school. I think it was called the Pacific. I think it was called the Pacific Institute. And there was a little grassy area, and then you just looked out, and there was the Pacific Ocean. And we sat down, and I turned to her, and I said, now, I have a loose-leaf binder here, and I'd like for you to look through this, and then I'd like your understanding. I have taken over a year. I hired two lawyers, and I asked them, just get me this information. How many lawsuits have pharmaceutical industry, main pharmaceutical industry companies, how many have they settled for what amount of money? How many people were injured or killed? And was there any prison time for any of the people? And most importantly, what happened to their stock value? Did it go up or down? Then I gave the other lawyer a similar request, except this time I want him to get all the major Wall Street firms. I want to go back 20 years. The volumes were so massive, I had to finally have them condensed. There were several thousand pages. It turns out that the lawsuits were in the millions. Millions. And the amount of money settled between just the Wall Street firms and the pharmaceutical companies were close to $1 trillion. It may be more, because some lawsuits were settled without us knowing the amount. And no one could talk. Now, not a single person went to jail. Not a single reputation of any of the individuals who sat on the boards, who were policymakers, knew that these crimes were being committed. And not a single company stock was adversely affected. To the contrary, their stocks actually went up, including the stock of Merck after Vioxx. It went up, not down, after they killed 60,000 people and did so with malice aforethought. And they never had to take the product off the market by any mandate of the FDA. They finally, after 4 years, they voluntarily withdrew it, but only at the very end. And it's estimated now that about 500,000 died, not 60,000. new studies coming out on that, and that'll, I'm sure, reopen up this whole case. But the question is, once they have settled the case, can you do anything about it? And the answer is probably not, because they'll come under some double jeopardy jurisprudence. Unless, of course, you find out they committed different crimes, but it was in the number that you're supposed to settle all claims. Now, she looked at all this and she said, my goodness. She said, this is just startling. She said, you should publish this information. And I said, exactly who would publish it? This is not the kind of information that the media wants to know, because virtually every media in the United States has either been financed by these people, is owned by these people, or accepted ads by these people, or have foundations or think tanks where the experts paid for by these companies are funding it. You start looking at how many different pockets that people in the pharmaceutical and Wall Street business put money. Almost every policymaker and media in the United States receives this support from them. And that's why they have so much power. And that's why they're virtually immune. But that didn't answer my question, I told her. And she said, you have to understand, Gary, that we have never had a real democracy, and we won't. We have a hierarchical society, and that's the way it's going to be. Those who run it will always create laws and rules to protect them, and they will get away with everything else. And if you and I did, we would immediately be held accountable for. No, it's just that simple. You know, when someone price fixes and, you know, makes billions of dollars, they get away with it. When someone ends up selling a drug off-label claims and have to pay a $3 billion fine, and you get into the nitty-gritty, you find out doctors were given money, doctors were given free trips, doctors had their lunches and dinners paid for. Well, that's bribery. Anytime money is conveyed between two people, or services rendered between two people, and a third person is not made aware of that transaction, then that is unethical. It is immoral, but it is not always illegal. So when a chemotherapy is given to a patient, and they're very expensive, and most chemotherapists make at least $200,000 a year directly from the drugs they're selling, and because they're given financial incentives for each drug they sell, and many rheumatologists are given the same from companies selling these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory pain reducers. If the doctor said, I must tell you, Luann, I'm giving you this chemotherapy, A, because there's nothing else I can give you, B, I have no real science to show you that's going to help you, there's no science for any of these chemotherapies, especially for end stage that's going to reverse anything, so... But it is going to cost you, and I will make about $10,000 to $20,000 out of the $200,000 that you're going to spend, or your insurance company is going to spend. Now, then you could say, okay, so you're telling me that this, the therapy you're giving me, you really have no proof. And then he would have to say, or she would say, if they were honest, well, Luann, this year about 550,000 Americans will be toe-tagged, put into the morgue, and who did only orthodox therapy, surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, or some combination thereof, and sometimes repeatedly. But they still end up dead. And a lot of famous people will die. But when a famous person dies, like John Wayne, or the actor Paul Newman, or Farrah Fawcett, or someone else, using your therapy, then it is a noble death. It is a valiant fight, and everyone involved will say they put up a good fight, we did the best we could. But the moment someone tries an alternative therapy, then they're, you know, they're being preyed upon by quacks and charlatans and people that would exploit. Well, hold on a second. They have actual results with terminal cancer. You don't. Your five-year survival with terminal cancer is zero, and yet you continue to treat people with ineffective drugs, and you have no science to back it up. None. I have 3,000 studies, and I saw the report by Professor Abel showing that all these studies they do because their belief that, you know, it works, not because they know it works. And if any patient doubts me, the next time you're told to take a particular therapy, just say, could you show me all the randomized double-blind placebo-controlled studies proving that one group given your drug and another group not given your drug, the survival rate? Don't tell me about one drug compared to another drug, because that's easily manipulate those figures to an unsuspecting person who doesn't understand research methodological procedures. And you'd find out that almost all of cancer is just one big giant fraud. But we'll have marches and, you know, we'll wear pink ribbons, and it's just scandalous. But that's where we're at. Is anyone ever held accountable? No. Any pharmaceutical company that makes those drugs? No. Anyone ever held accountable personally for anything? The answer is never. And that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it always will be. That's not going to change. Power will never admonish itself, correct itself, or surrender itself, ever. So it must deny any negative virtue. It must deny its culpability, and it must say that you're wrong. That's how it works. Okay? Next issue.
Okay. Let's see. Here's a letter from a woman. Doesn't give her name. She said, last Sunday, my mother's sister and I spent a day in New York City. We live on Long Island. And we visited Soho, saw a film. Then we went to your health food store, specifically because their mother shops there. And they asked, why would she shop there when there are other stores that might be closer to where she lives? And she says she comes here because 5 years ago, she went to a lecture in the city. And as a result of the lecture, which you gave, she met with the family and said, as of that day, that we must speak with her as if she were a real human being and not an object. She gave us examples, specific examples, of how our words hurt her and how we felt that our needs were more important than hers. At this point, she said, I expect to be treated with respect or that she was going to be gone. Of course, we were stunned, but she said it was because of your inspiration. She says she shops at your store because, unlike most business people, you don't really take any money from your health food store. You give discounts to seniors, which she is, and she very much appreciates. You give to homeless people, and she found out that you actually share the profits every year with your employees. And at this point, she says, she realized that you're in a store where the owner is more concerned with the people and the community, and not just like most corporate owners are, which is greed and power. So she has a whole new perspective about the nature of greed and about human nature and how we treat each other. So she's asking, if this is actually true, she asked if you could do a show on what her mother coined, or what you coined that her mother stated, was ethical exchange. She looked it up in Google, and she couldn't find a definition anywhere. And she's asking, could you please explain what this ethical exchange is?
I believe everything she said is correct, but I don't know who the woman is. I've counseled or been, I've had 100,000 people in my lectures in the last just several years. But I believe that we are making a grave mistake if we attack capitalism as all evil, promote socialism as all good. I believe that none of that is accurate. I believe that what we're really doing, any small business person or any artist or anyone doing anything, is we're trying to exchange our services, our unique talents, for something that honors the time and energy, creativity, and uniqueness of that exchange. Hence, if you have something that you have and you're exchanging it with someone or someones, then there should be a fair exchange. Now, there's times in life where we're able to negotiate a fair exchange, and other times people hold all the cards, and instead of dealing with us fairly, which they could, instead they'd rather manipulate us and exploit us. So if a college student who's just out and has a $150,000 loan that the parents have to pay back because they are on the hook for it. They signed it. And but the student feels morally obligated, but then goes to work and there's no job except packing, you know, stuff in a grocery store at $7 an hour. That's not a fair exchange, because if you look at the profits of the store, look like a Walmart, it's the largest retailer in the world. And so then the interest to the corporations is to its policymakers and to its stockholders, to the value of its stock. And therefore, if you're going to go to work for these people or you're going to buy something from them, understand that it's all based upon greed. Whereas if you are able to work with people who will not exploit you, but give you a good quality service or product, and you in turn will give them your loyalty and support, that's what's been missing in the United States. And I'll just give you one quick example of this. Think of the time when you could walk down a street in the United States and you knew everyone. Every shop owner had been there for a long time. Whether it was a bread store where it was just breads, or the bike place where you could go in and get a bike that had been made there or made in the United States and sold there. And now, if there was ever an issue or problem, you knew these people. You could talk about them. It was always resolved. Now those bikes are made in China. And 57,000 factories have been closed in the last 12 years. We've lost 8.2 million Americans at high quality and high expertise jobs to high expertise visa participants brought in to work for one half or one third the salaries and none of the benefits, who desperately need work. And so we didn't care about the people. We didn't care about a fair exchange, or what you might call ethical capitalism. Instead, we felt that exploiting it, we had the power to do so. If we had the power to get rid of a union, get power to get rid of a company that had been in a town for 100 years, supplying people with an income and a tax base, and got it done in China cheaper, then all we cared about was how much money we made. So whether it's tennis shoes or sports cars or television sets or socks, we'd rather have it made where people are exploited and care not about that. So there's no fair exchange. There's no ethic in how we make our money. But it's not just about the people who are exploiting it. Every person that buys one of those products, without first asking where did this come from, what kind of conditions was it made or created under, then we're enabling that. So this whole idea that somehow there's just 1% of the population who are greedy and bad is not true. Most people are greedy and bad. That's the reality of it. And if not, then we wouldn't have more Americans shopping for their stuff, of which 90% is made in China, than any place else in the world that they shop. All the while, cannibalizing their own economies. It doesn't make any sense. So I believe we have to get away from capitalism as a term. Instead, change the term to define it. And define that part of earning an income, whether it's an artist, a self-employed person, or a person working together, or a big company, as ethical. Make your money ethically. Offer your services ethically. And then that's where I term the phrase ethical exchange. You know, a fair exchange. So you're
and
giving,
that would include barter, too, right? That would embrace barter.
That embraces barter and trade. Yes, it does. Okay.
Beautiful. Brilliant.
We're out of time. Thank you, Luann. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening, but we're out of time. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now let's say hello to Mike Rupert standing by. Hi, Mike.
Hiya, Gary. Happy Sunday.
Thank you. What's your show about today?
Well, we have, I think it's the most, no, I don't think. It is the most important show that I have ever done. I'm coming out of the closet in some ways as tracker of truth, but tonight I am integrating a great many things that that I couldn't do as Michael C. Rupert, but we're going to find coherence tonight in explaining what's going on in the world in indigenous prophecies, in extraterrestrial stuff, which I'm free to talk about now for a change, and what's going on in the world right now in a way that makes sense more than anything ever has out there in explaining how we got to where we are right now, what we need to do, and how we're going to get out of this. I've had some amazing events, but I talked about the 100th monkey in the documentary Collapse, and we have reached the 100th monkey, and there are some miracles happening. And I'm going to talk about all of them tonight so that we can use all of the systems and all of the parts and all of the things we know in our universe and try to make sense of that rather than cutting it up in little pieces.
Look forward to hearing it. Have a great show, Mike.
Thanks, Gary.
Back in a moment with Mike Rupert. Please stay with us.